is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Mijairo Ducano from Gannon Baker Basketball, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com.
We just sit down and chat. And if it's in the morning, we usually chat a lot. If it's in the afternoon, it's usually before they've got an open gym or a shoot around. So then I'll get to see, you know, the talent of the players and just how the coach runs practice.
Corey Heights is the founder of Prep Athletics. Prep Athletics offers players and their families a trusted source for the world of prep schools. Corey learns the family's goals, the player's academic and athletic ability, as well as their financial resources, and then puts all that information together to choose schools from the Prep Athletics database where this player could potentially succeed. Corey has been an assistant coach at the high school level, worked at John Calipari's University of Kentucky basketball camp, and helped run the Nike Top 48 High School All-Star camps in Taiwan. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Get ready to learn as you listen to this episode with Corey Heights, founder of Prep Athletics.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Prep Athletics, Corey Heights. Corey is going to spend some time tonight educating us on the world of prep school basketball. Corey, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Mike, Jason, thank you very much for having me on tonight.
Absolutely. We are thrilled to be able to have you on to learn more about a world that, quite honestly, I am not super familiar with. So I'm planning to get educated right along with our audience tonight. Corey, I want to start out by asking you to just share and tell us a little bit about Prep Athletics, what it is, where it came from, and just give us that elevator pitch and let us people know what they're going to be in for as they listen to this episode tonight.
Yeah, well, thanks for letting me explain that, Mike. So me placing kids in the prep school happened by accident. And it first started back in 1993 when my cousin Brad Miller left his high school his senior year in Indiana and went to a prep school in Maine. And then after that year in that environment, he played 4 years at Purdue and then 14 years in the NBA. And I actually did a postgrad year myself at the Air Force Academy's prep school. And then my only D1 options were military academies. So for my postgrad year, I then played at Air Force. So what I tell families is without prep schools, you know, my cousin has said this many times, he's not playing in the NBA. And without prep school, I'm not playing D1 basketball for free. So it's changed the trajectory of my family's, you know, life, right? For him and I. So back 13 years ago, I actually was coaching in Canada, met a real good player there and said, you know what, this kid could do what I do and do a postgrad year and see what happens. And I placed my first kid at, actually, ironically, at the same prep school my cousin Brad went to. And now 13 years later, I've turned it into a full consulting business. And I've placed kids at over 37 different prep schools from 19 different countries. And what I do is there's a whole landscape out there, Mike, of prep schools, postgrad opportunities, and I narrow them down from, you know, 100 postgrad opportunities to the right fitting 3 to 5. And by right fitting, the prep school world is just like the college world, to where, you know, Central Connecticut State has a different culture and as a school and as a basketball team than Duke, than, you know, UCLA, right? So I kind of tell kids, hey, you might be a low major, or you might be a high major, or you might be someone that wants to play in the Big Ten Conference. I kind of do that for the prep school basketball world.
All right. So you go from you attending a prep school and having it be a benefit to you. You place your first player there. Obviously, there's a lot of steps to go from that point to where you are now in terms of understanding the whole world, understanding what the different programs offer, who the coaches are, what the schools are all about. So how do you sort of build that base of knowledge once you start thinking that, hey, this could be a way that I could have a positive impact on kids in their basketball career?
Yeah, Mike, it all happened by accident. And that's a fact. After I placed this kid from Canada at the prep school in Maine, he got a full ride to an NAI school that a year later won the NAI National Championship. And then I started seeing kids in Kentucky, where I was coaching high school ball at the time, and said, hey, I think you might benefit from this too. And I think you might benefit from this as well. And it was me cold calling places and just asking, like, hey, what are you looking for? How much do you guys cost? And not really knowing the whole landscape yet. And then in 2011, I moved to Washington, D.C. to be with my now wife. And I actually got on the high school coaching staff at Gonzaga College High School, which at the time was a top 10 school in the country. I mean, we had guys, we had Chris Jenkins on that team, you know, who made the shot for Villanova to win the national title. Yep. Nate Britt, who won it a year later with North Carolina. We had a kid that went to Wake Forest, Dayton, Syracuse, Loyola, Brown, Mount St. Mary's, Alabama for football, Florida State for football, Illinois for football. All those caliber players were in our program there, which meant every day we had coaches in the gym. So one of the things I did with Gonzaga was just shake hands and talk to every coach and just tell them about our players. And I made a lot of connections that way. So by the time I wanted to get a little bit more into the prep school world, I reached out to about 20 coaches and I said, hey, if I'm going to go to New England and visit 3 programs in a road trip, which 3 should I visit? And I got a couple consistent schools over and over again. And then I took off on a 5-day road trip from DC to New England and started hitting 2 prep schools a day just to see them in person, just to kind of meet the coach face to face. I didn't even have a consulting business then, Mike. I was just trying to figure out, you know, a little bit more landscape of this world just so I could help kids for free. Cause I used to try to beg kids to let me help them for free. And this is before I turned into a consulting business. And it just every year I would take 5 days off and go hit the road and visit 10 more prep schools. You know, and one day I went down south from DC and visited Hargrave and Fork Union and Massanutten. You know, I visited the schools in Pennsylvania, Ohio. I've been to Florida to visit those down there. So this has not been an overnight process. This has actually taken time. And like I said, before I turned it into a business, I was doing it just for the love of the game to find more options for potential kids from Kentucky I could help. And just to back up, you know, since I am from Kentucky, you know, it's up there with New York City, Washington, D.C., Indiana, as being, you know, basketball meccas, right? So I knew there was tons of talent in Kentucky because I grew up there on a really good team and I played with good players, but it's kind of a desert to where teams The college ranks outside of Kentucky, Louisville, Eastern Kentucky, Northern Kentucky didn't really fly there because you would fly in from other parts of the country, get a rental car, and only see one player at one practice, right? So just not a great way to see a lot of talent at once. So I tried to get as many Kentucky kids, talk to as many as I could about a post-grad option. And I could speak from experience. I mean, I'm coming from when I was in high school, the reason I needed a post-grad year is because our team was so good, I needed to get more minutes. And so, I think I've sent over the years 8 players from Kentucky to do a post-grad year, and 7 of them have gone D1 because there's talent there. There's talent there. And it's a high IQ. And then I just started expanding, and word of mouth started spreading, and I started helping kids from Connecticut and from this country and from that country. And then just organically, by doing something I was passionate about and telling people the truth about this world, it just got so big, and it got so just so many people coming at me. I decided to actually turn it into a business. And, fast forward to now, 13 years later, I absolutely love what I'm doing, and I'm helping kids from all over the globe and turning a lot away too, Mike, because there are a lot of kids that try to get into this prep school world, and there's a very specific set of requirements you need to have to get into this world.
All right. So I want to ask you a question about that, but I want to go backwards. How long into the process were you when you started to think, hey, this could potentially be a business? In other words, when did your mindset shift from, hey, this is just something that I'm finding interesting and I want to help kids and it's just kind of part of what I'm doing as part of my coaching career, to a whole new sort of mindset and shift into, this could potentially be a business? How far into it were you when that shift took place?
Yeah, I was about 7 years into it. And it was a cold November night, and it was in Connecticut. I went to stay with one of my college coaches from Air Force, who's one of my best friends. And, he'd give me a lot of advice on this because he runs his AAU team. He's a former D1 player, former D1 coach, and he knows a lot about the game. And he sat there and just yelled at me for 2 hours. Yelled at me in a loving way, but like, hey, man, you've spent all this time, all this money, this bandwidth. And he goes, you are doing something and you have a knowledge that people would pay for. And at the time I was like, yeah, I don't feel right charging for this. Like, how can I do that? And he's like, easy. He goes, there's people out there that'll pay you for your knowledge. He goes, Corey, you've done the research. You've done the visits. You have experience placing kids. You know how the admission process works. He goes, just become a consultant, and help families that see the value in this. And it's much like a mortgage broker. It's much like a realtor. When we moved here to Denver from Washington, D.C. 2 years ago, we had a realtor to take the entire metroplex of Denver and narrow it down based on our needs to the right couple, the couple neighborhoods that'd be good fits for our price range, what we wanted, and factors that are important to us. So I do that same thing for prep school. Do you want to go to a school and be on a team with 10 other guys? Do you want to go on a team and be on a, roster with maybe one D3 kid? Do you want high academics? Do you want, basket weaving for classes? Do you want to go to a military school? Do you want to go to an animal like IMG? So yeah, that conversation with that coach really changed my life. And, when I turned it into a business, I felt weird at first, but then I started seeing that, this is a value I'm bringing to families. And those that, check the boxes and qualify for a prep school, I would like to be there to help guide them and help them make the right decision. Because this, ultimately, it's just like going to a college. This can be a life-changing experience that can change the trajectory of a kid's life.
Absolutely. I know that when you go from doing something for free to charging for it, there's a mentality that you have to kind of, or an obstacle, a mental block that you kind of have to get over, especially when you had been doing it for free for so long that now to kind of go ahead and think, well, wow, somebody's actually going to pay me for this. How'd you figure out what to charge and how did you get over that hesitancy of actually charging people for something that you used to do for free?
Yeah, I mean, I talked it over with my coach and my starting fee was $1,000 and it was $500 up front. And once you signed with a prep school, it was $500 after that. And some people, even to this day, I'll still help families out for free if they can't afford me, or there's a certain circumstance. But I've also found out, through trial and error, like I some big time players have come to me and say, hey, I want you to help me. And I've done it for free, knowing they'd be easy to place. But then those guys forget about you real quick, too. So For me, it's been a trial and error. And now, full disclosure, you know, my fee is $3,000 and it's $1,500 to start the process. If I decide to take you on as a client, and we'll get to that in a second, and then $1,500 once you pick a prep school that I've put you in front of. But Mike, the thing is that where I don't feel bad when I owe it anymore is a couple of reasons. One, I can save a family potentially up to $30,000 on tuition, right? Because I know the market value of these kids now because I'm constantly in conversation with these prep school coaches. I'm constantly in conversations with admission directors. So I know on like a daily basis, kind of like the stock market, on what a going rate is for a kid and who has financial aid money right now, who still needs a big man, who needs an underclassman. I keep up with the zeitgeist of the prep school basketball world. And what I tell people too is, look, 99% of the people that pick a prep school don't use a consultant. So I was like, you don't need me. Just you can go online. You can make phone calls. You'll be fine. But if you're going through me, you're going to have the best options in front of you. And guess what? These coaches are going to get back to me very quickly because of the relationships I have with them. And I'm going to guide you through the whole process. I'm going to try to save you money, get the best value, and put you in a situation that could potentially take you from a D3 player to a potential scholarship player. So in the big scheme of things, my fee plus prep school tuition might be a real life Vegas gamble if it pays off and gets you a D2 or D1 scholarship at the end of the day. So that's the way I kind of rationalize it. And if people don't want to use me, that's fine. The internet has every single piece of information I have. It's just I have more time and more miles on the ground, and that's what you're paying for.
Would you say that you spend more time developing the relationships with prep school admissions officers, the schools themselves, and the coaches, and then the players are coming to you? Or are you spending more time looking actively for players to recruit to your service? Which one of those better describes the process that you have? Is it more, hey, I've got this expertise, I've got all these relationships, and the players now kind of come to you? And has that shifted over time? Just talk about the sort of the balance between those two things.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm going to put 75% of my effort into those relationships with the prep school coaches and their staffs. Because if I don't have relationships with them, it doesn't matter. Right. So that's got to be first and foremost. That's why the visits is so important. So these coaches and admission directors can meet me and look me in the eye. And you know this, you do business as well on the side, Mike. When you meet someone in person, that bond you forge, even if it's for 5 minutes, when you call them on the phone in the future, you have that connection to where if you don't have that connection, you're just another voice in the line. I don't care what you're offering them. It's just not quite the same. So I've put a lot of effort and time into that. And my dad, you know, we're business partners in my other business, which is real estate development. And he always has a quote he's told me, which is, you've got to make your calls. You've got to make your calls. He and I have flown across country before for a half hour meeting just because we felt that would be worth it in the long run. Right. So I've taken that same attitude to the prep school world and meeting these coaches and admission folks and seeing the schools. In fact, just this week, I was picking out 10 schools that I need to go visit for the first time this fall when I ended up taking my trip there. So I look forward to it. It's always beautiful in New England. The leaves are changing and I get to see beautiful prep schools. So to me, that's not even work. That's fun. Now, as far as finding players go, I don't proactively go after players, right? Especially underclassmen. Underclassmen, I don't want to be the guy going in there and pilfering high school rosters to get their kids and place them at prep schools. I don't care. I don't have an ego. I don't care who comes to me. I don't care if you're a billionaire. I don't care if you're a lottery pick. I don't care if you're terrible. You have to have the check marks to get you in these prep schools, but I don't have an ego of trying to get the best players. So for me, going to an AU event or being proactive and reaching out to kids on Twitter, I've done it on Twitter a couple times, and it's just, I don't like cold calling, but I have done a lot of research on getting my website built up to snuff. I've got a podcast going. I've got a lot of contacts around the globe now on every continent to where the more I can let people know that I'm going to be the clearinghouse, hopefully, for prep school basketball, the more, you know, people I can have at least reach out to me and see if this is the right situation for them. So my website, when you type in prep school basketball on Google, comes up first or second. So I get a lot of people reaching out to me and asking questions. And out of about every 20 people that reach out, you know, one will qualify for prep school and actually want to go forward with me through that process. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, majority of the time spent fostering those relationships, keeping up to date on what their needs are. And I'd say the other 25% are getting new clients.
All right. So you've mentioned a couple times the requirements or qualifications that a player – has to have in order for a prep school to be a good fit for them. So why don't you talk about those boxes that a player has to check off in order for it to make sense for them to consider a prep school?
Okay, great question. And this is the thing I deal with every single day with kids and families that reach out to me. One, you've got to have athletic ability. It doesn't have to be D1 ability, high major ability. It can be the lowest of D3. Like, it doesn't even have to be that high, but that's one thing you have to have that needs to be compelling. Two, you've got to have good grades. And three, you've got to have a financial aspect. And four, you got to have an interesting story. So mix all of those together. The better you are as a player, the less your grades need to be, the less money you need. The worse you are as a player, the more money you'll need, the better grades you'll have, the more interesting you'll need to be. So it's a weird combination of a balance of all those, because you have to think what a prep school admission department's looking at. A lot of these prep schools are getting applications from all over the world, from very interesting kids, right? So why are they going to give your kid a roster spot at their school or a placement? And if you're requesting financial aid, why are they going to give you financial aid? So you need to tell them why. And so I first always go through a coach and I'll say, hey, here's this kid's highlights. Here's his transcript. The family can pay X amount of dollars. By the way, he also plays cello and he's vice president of student council. Let me know if you're interested or not. And based on that coach's needs, position-wise, based on the financial aid needed, based on the grades, and if it's a compelling story, that coach will tell me yes or no, I'm interested. Unfortunately, there's a lot of kids out there that come at me that, let's talk about guards. So this year I've probably had 400 people reach out to me, and probably six of them were 6'7" or higher. The rest of those were guards, right? So,
right.
And this is the same from college, and you know this as well from your experience. There are you throw a stick, you're going to hit 10 guards in this world. So what makes you stand out as a guard? All right. Right now, at this late in the game in May, you've got to either be able to write a check for full tuition, or you better have a D1 offer or multiple offers in hand to get anywhere near a prep school roster spot, right? Even in the fall, when there's still roster spots, financial aid available, it's so hard to place guards that they've got to have a compelling story. Right? Like, I placed a kid this year from the island of Mauritius. It's in the Indian Ocean somewhere. And that kid was 5'11", you know, a little pipsqueak that wanted to do a post-grad year, but he spoke three languages. He graduated with his IB degree out of high school. He's from an island that no prep school has that flag flying in their dining hall. Right? And he's a nice kid with a great personality who also plays an instrument very well. So that kid right there paid $30,000 to go to a $65,000 prep school. So this prep school gave him $35,000 in aid because he's an interesting kid that's going to be part of the culture at the school. And guess what? Kids are going to learn more from a kid from Mauritius than the school might from a kid from New England, right? So schools want diversity just like colleges, but you need to have some aspect of that. If you're a big guy, you'll have a good chance of being placed. If you're a big guy with grades, even better. If you're a big guy with grades and D1 offers from a state that's not really represented at the school, you'll have even more interest and get more money thrown at you, even if you can afford to pay the full tuition. And let me give another example here, Mike. Last year, I had a kid from the DC area, played his first 2 years at DeMatha, two other years at a Baltimore Catholic League school, 6'8", 29 ACT, 3.8 GPA, African-American kid. And he had a D1 offer from Youngstown State, which is up in your neck of the woods. So he has every single bona fide, minority, big man, good grades, D1 offer. Now, here's the problem. Both his parents are doctors. So does he qualify for financial aid?
I would guess not much.
Okay, you'd guess not. But he also brings a value to a school, right? So we got him, and this is a plug here. He got through me, and the family was willing to put up $30,000 for a post-grad year. I got him into a AA school, I'm not going to mention the one, for only $20,000. So that kid there, even though he could have written a check for $65,000, he got a $45,000 scholarship because of everything he brought to the table. So the more of those categories you're interesting in, whether it be athletics, academics, finances, and how interesting you are, and some combination of that, you got to think about a prep school and if a prep school would want to take a kid like that on. And that's where I'm kind of like a clearinghouse to where, if you come to me and reach out, I'm going to send you a quick questionnaire, ask you a lot of questions, see your transcript, look at your highlights, and then I'm going to ask you the toughest question I've got to ask, which is, how much are you willing to invest in tuition? If that number's too low, I say, thank you, but I can't help you. If that number comes in about right, then we'll move to the next step and I'll say, hey, I can help you. Let's move forward. So it's a combination of all those things, Mike, that prep schools are looking for. And therefore, that's what I need to look for in kids I take on as clients.
How is it working with international versus domestic players? What's the difference from your perspective? Is there any?
They're more intriguing to a school. If a school has more, the more diversity a school has, the better the school likes it, right? So when I had that kid from the island of Mauritius, I mean, that schools were licking their chops for him. Even though he wasn't that good and didn't have $65,000, they were licking their chops because of how that culture of growing up there would potentially spread throughout the school and have everyone learn a little bit more. So from a culture perspective, schools love it. It also mostly means, too, that a kid's going to be bilingual or trilingual, which schools love as well. Now, basketball-wise, coaches like it because, you know, you might get a really good player. You might get a kid that doesn't hurt your team, but you at least bring a different flavor to your locker room. And, you know, but it's always a mystery, too. Like, a lot of these coaches never see those international kids in person until the day they show up on campus, right? So it is also a risk as well. So there have been some success stories. There have been some kids that have showed up and been duds, whether they're my kids or not. That's just the reality. But coaches like having a diverse team. They don't just want kids from one part of the country. It is a prep school, and part of going to that prep school is being around people from different, you know, religions, backgrounds, socioeconomic statuses, sexes, belief system, et cetera, et cetera. And that's one of the beauties of prep school is it's not homogenized. It's very, very diverse. So do they want foreign kids? Yes. And one thing that's actually was hurt by COVID is a lot of these schools fund a lot of people through full pay Chinese students, right? And once COVID hit, that really hurt. And some schools out there are known to have, you know, half their school from the US and other parts of the world, the other half's from China. And there's a really weird cultural dynamic at the school that just, it's not as diverse with such a large Chinese contingent. And some schools that can't take all these Chinese now because of the COVID virus are hurting financially. So it's a very interesting dynamic that each school has culturally, but normally these schools want as much diversity as possible and they'll give a kid aid for it. The one other thing I need to mention about that too is all kids that apply to US prep schools have to fill out a financial aid form, which is similar to what you would do for a college. Now, the foreign folks that are applying have to do this as well, but they don't have to submit their U.S. taxes. So a family could be worth $1 million in Portugal, and they might tell a school, well, we only make $65,000 a year, and the schools can't verify it, right? So a lot of foreign kids, maybe they have a lot more money, but since the schools cannot verify their income, they can sometimes get a better deal than maybe they normally should.
Understood. All right, next thing. When you start talking about prep schools themselves, how do you break them down in terms of, do you consider them to be in different tiers? I know when we talked before we got on the podcast, you talked a little bit about pop-up academies and the places like IMG, and then you have high academic schools and military. So just talk about maybe some of the different categories that you deal with of the schools, and then what types of student athletes fit best in which type of environment?
Yeah, well, first, before I get to the pop-up academies, let's talk about kind of the breakdown of the just stereotypes of the prep school world, especially for basketball players. You've got your high academic schools out there like Exeter, Deerfield, Choate. And these places have been around for hundreds of years, have very, very famous people that have graduated from them, very good educations and good basketball as well. But you have to have certain Ivy League minimum standards on your transcript to even get sniffed at by these places, right? So there's only a certain clientele that wants to go there. And I've sent a couple kids to Exeter, and they're busting their butt in the classroom there versus maybe getting more run on the court. So it's a unique situation going to these higher academic places. Then you've got a lot of prep schools up there that might have 10 D1 guys in the roster. That's your New Hamptons, your Northfield Mount Hermans, your Brewster Academy. That's its own animal there. Those are mostly AAA schools. Then you've got AA schools where you have St. Andrews, Worcester Academy, Cushing, Kimball Union. You might have 1 to 6 D1 guys at that level, right? Academics are still good. There's varying ranges among those schools, but it's not going to be like your Deerfield and Exeter where it's much more competitive. Then you've got your single A schools, your class B's and C's. You know, these might have one or two D1 guys. Maybe they have three D3 guys. Maybe they have no college guys in their roster. So that's kind of like the bottom tier. That's like the low major. Then we go over to Pennsylvania and Ohio. We've got a few schools sprinkled around there. You come down to Virginia. You've got your Fork Union, your Hargrave, your Massanutten, which are your military academy options. And then you go down to Florida and you've got a bunch of pop-up academies, but you've also got Montverde Academy, which is very nationally known. And then the beast of them all, which is IMG Academy. The farthest west you go for legit prep schools is Lake Forest Academy in Chicago. And that's about it. Everything else past that, there might be a Wasatch Academy or maybe a
Kyle Kuntz is from Strongsville. That's where Jason and I are. So,
oh, I know Kyle well.
I've known Kyle since he was, I don't know, I used to play basketball with his dad. I've known Kyle since he was five, probably. So, yeah,
I've known Kyle since I was six or seven. So, yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. Well, I'll be sure to tell him hi on your all's behalf and vice versa.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, that's kind of the breakdown of the legit brick and mortar prep schools. And that's one thing I say a lot, Mike, is brick and mortar. And now we're going to get into the part of the conversation, which I love talking about, which is the difference between a brick and mortar prep school and a basketball academy. Now, do you know the difference between the two before I start?
I could probably guess and speculate, but I'm going to honestly say that I don't necessarily know the difference in it, other than it seems like a pop-up academy would be primarily set up to just field a basketball team and draw in dollars as a result of said basketball program, which enables the school itself to continue functioning. And without a high level basketball team and players becoming a part of that academy, that the school itself doesn't exist. That's my perspective on what I think it would be. Whether I'm right or not, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's not bad. So one thing there's a little bit different is you don't even need a school to do a pop-up academy. So right now, you, Jason, and I could start Corey, Jason and Mike Academy in the next 10 minutes. We really could. We just started, put up a Facebook page, and then bam, we start telling kids we want them to be in our program. So these pop-up academies are not brick and mortar schools. Okay. The brick and mortar schools have administrations. They have Wikipedia pages. They have financial aid departments, janitorial staff, school nurses, facilities, endowments, board of trustees are accredited. I mean, they're like colleges. The pop-up schools, you know, there's some of them out there that, like Huntington Prep, you know, they were a basketball program that was associated with St. Joseph Catholic School in Huntington, West Virginia. So there's a lot of basketball programs that are connected to Christian schools out there. And then you can also have a post-grad program that just pops up. They just take post-grad players. And if you want to take a JUCO class online, great. If you want to do ACT, SAT prep online, great. If you don't want to, that's fine too. You can do whatever you want. So I just want people to know these two things are not even. They both offer post-grad years, but you know, one's accredited and one is not. And that's fine. Look, there are some fine pop-ups out there that are post-grad academies, but there are also some out there that are criminal in what they do. And what I always tell parents is, look, just do Google search of the coach, of the staff, of the program, and then ask a lot of tough questions. Do a lot of due diligence. And even if you do that due diligence, you know, these guys are great salesmen out there. And, you know, some of these programs might charge between $3,000 and $40,000 to be in them. But some might have a group house kids live in. Some might play 50 games, right, against other teams where no coaches around. Some kids might be on the third team. Who's watching that third team? So it's just, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked. And I'm working right now on an article that I'm just putting every question on there I would ask one of these post-grad academies to feel comfortable about sending my son there if I was looking at one of them. And mind you, you know, this might be the only chance some kid has, Mike. Like if you've got $5,000, that's it. And you're looking for a chance. This is your chance. But you have to know going in, like, there's no guarantees that you're going to get placed from this. There's no guarantees you're going to have diverse food meals every night of the week. There's no guarantee you're not going to be a room with six other guys. There's no guarantee you're going to get playing time or seen by coaches. So that's what I want to educate people on is, hey, go to these places. There are some good ones out there, but these are not prep schools. So do not call them prep schools. They are basketball academies.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com. What are the top three questions you would tell a parent to ask a prospective school coach, person who's contacting them about a prep school? What are the top three questions that they should ask?
Did you place all of your guys last year? I'm not worried about placing the good guys. Did you place the guys at the end of the bench that are paying full price? That's question number one, right? Number two is, can I talk to families and players that you've had in the past and get their reference? Because I want to hear the dirt on what it's like day to day from someone that's not pitching me. And three, what are my living and dietary arrangements? Because if you're not sleeping well and not eating well, that's going to affect everything else. Now, mind you, notice I didn't mention academics. I didn't mention what team you're going to be on. You know, if there's three teams, which team am I going to be on? Am I going to be on the first team that's playing in the big time events, or am I going to be on the third team? How is that determined? I'd ask this blunt question too. Have you guys ever been in trouble with the law? Because there are guys out there that have been arrested that are running post-grad programs right now, which is crazy. So yeah, those would be my top three though.
And how many people, when you give people that advice, what percentage of players and their parents or their families do you think really ask those questions who end up at one of these academies, if you had to guess?
I have no idea. They don't go through me. I have no idea what their conversations are with these people. But every time I meet a coach, and I've met with these guys. Look, in the old days, I placed a couple kids at these places because I tried to help the kid that only had $5,000, right? And I did this quite a bit until I got burned three times in 1 year. One time I had to rescue a kid at midnight and sneak him out because it was such a bad situation that we had no idea it was like that. Hell, I've been around this and I got sold a bill of goods, right? So if I'm getting duped, what's your average, single mom going to think when this guy's sweet talking her at an AU event, So I'm just putting that out there, but it's a tough world to navigate, but that's why I want to talk to as many people as possible and say, you can go to that place. I just want you to ask tough questions and I want you to know what you're getting into. And that's what I say every time I talk to a coach. I think I might even ask you this when I talk to you for the first time, but it's like, what's your pitch? Like, give me your elevator pitch on what your program does. Why should I come there? And and then you ask for references. Well, where'd you play or who have you placed in the past? And you can smell real quick because this is a small world. Which the basketball world is very small. You can smell real quick who, knows what they're talking about and who doesn't. And you see these guys out there, Mike, that they're doing this to try to get a shoe deal, to try to get a guy that goes to a high major program or a low major program where they can get on and be a D1 assistant. Or they're going to try to get a kid that goes to the league or go to the pros so they can get a cut of their commission at some point. So there are people doing boring work out there that don't have an ego. Those are the people you want to find. But the guys that are trying to, get on the coattails, the good players and get that money, those are the guys I'd be very wary of.
All right. So that goes to something you talked about earlier, which is you yourself doing your research and going on your trips and going to visit these schools and visit with coaches. When you go and visit a coach, what does that visit look like? If it's a place that you haven't been before, what does that visit look like? What kinds of things are you doing? What kind of questions are you asking? Who are you getting to talk to while you're there? And how do you get the kind of access that you need in order to gather your information? How does all that come about and come together so that you can leave there feeling like you have a pretty good handle on what that place is all about?
Yeah, these coaches love showing off their places, and I love showing up and being, getting to see them, right? And they're all a little bit different. Just like college campuses are. So when I go to these places, one, I want to meet the coach, right? Sometimes I meet him at tournaments before I've gone to the school. Sometimes I've only talked to him on the phone. Sometimes it's just a text and the first time we meet or talk is on that visit. And I just want to get a general snapshot of the school. So walk me around, show me a dorm, show me a classroom. Let me see where the kids eat and hang out. Let's see the gym. If I can, I'd love to meet the admission officer. a director of admissions. I'd love to meet the headmaster just so they know who I am, if my name or one of my kids ever pops up. And then we just sit down and chat. And if it's in the morning, we usually chat a lot. If it's in the afternoon, it's usually before they've got an open gym or a shoot around. So then I'll get to see, you know, the talent of the players and, you know, just how the coach runs practice. And then if it's open gym period, there are probably other college coaches there. And I'll talk to them as well and ask them, hey, what have you recruited from here before? Have you, you know, what's the type of player that comes out of here? So really, I don't need to do that much extensive work. I mean, I've stopped in places before for 15 minutes just because it was between point A and point B. And I just wanted to see the school and do a quick hello to the coach. And that's been good. Just that face-to-face, like I mentioned earlier. But I love it. I mean, like I said, I'm traveling through New England in the fall. Leaves are changing, and I'm going from one beautiful prep school to the next. And it's just hanging out and just, you know, shooting the crap and just getting to know a little bit more about them, telling you a little bit more about yourself, and just seeing the energy there. Because, you know, in the future, if I'm connecting a family to that school, I have to give that family kind of a rundown on the school. Hey, this coach is a young guy with no kids. He's a former D1 assistant. He's a gym rat. Or, hey, this coach is a little bit older. He's in the Hall of Fame. His kids are grown. He's just not as fiery as much as he was in the old days. Hey, this campus is kind of dusty. You know, it hasn't been updated in a while. Or, like other schools, hey, it's got 8 brand new buildings and a brand new gym because they did a $500 million campaign to fix up their school. So all that stuff goes into kind of my database to where when I talk to families, I give them those differences and similarities between the schools they're looking at. So to me, it's one of my favorite weeks of the year, Mike, because I get to see these new places. And, you know, every time I come out of there, I'm like, golly, you know, if I had a son or a daughter, like where would I send them? And I've seen so many great places. It would be such a hard decision because it's just a world that once you start seeing it, it opens you up to something you just like now even I'll like go to IMG. I was there a couple weeks ago. I wish I was 17 again and could go down there and do the drills they do, work out in the workout facilities they do, you know, train with the pros in the preseason like they do. I would love that because that was not available back in 91 and 95 when I was in high school. So it's just a fascinating world. And that's another thing, aside from letting people know the difference between prep schools and academies, I want to let kids know around the world about the prep school option because there are so many kids out there that would benefit from this that just, you know, outside of the New England area, just really are not that well informed about it.
All right. So just share with us, what do you think are the major benefits? If I'm a high school athlete that is graduating, and again, we could take it out of this odd, weird pandemic year, but just in a normal situation, and I'm considering a prep school, what are the biggest benefits that I'm going to derive from taking that year to go to a prep school before I head off to college? What are the benefits?
Yeah, great question. There's 4 parts to this. The first is athletic. So one, you're going to get an extra spring and summer of AAU, right? Which could be huge because, you know, the boy body develops between 17 and 20. You don't know who's going to become a man when. You know, I became a man and put on 20 pounds of muscle during my post-grad year because that's when my DNA turned on. Some kids are built like that as 10th graders. Some kids don't hit that till they're 20. So if you haven't hit that, you know, becoming a man yet, that could happen during that summer or it could happen during the post-grad year. But you get more exposure during the summer with AAU events, with elite camps, and that exposure is going to lead into your open gym period with the prep schools. Now, let's talk about the open gym period. And this is something that a lot of people need to know about. Once you arrive on campus in August, up until practice starts in October, you have multiple open gyms every week at your prep schools. And during that period, college coaches come from every single conference in America to these prep school gyms. And here's why. These prep schools within close distance to each other all work together to schedule their open gyms at different times. So Brewster Academy might have their open gym at 7 in the morning. And then Proctor Academy, which is 40 miles away, might have theirs at 2:30 in the afternoon. And then Kimball Union, which is 30 miles away, might have theirs at 7 at night. And that happens all throughout New England. So if I'm a college coach coming from Texas Tech, I can go to 5 days in New England and see 15 open gyms with all D1 players in every single gym, right? Plus, the New England recruiting report comes out that Adam Finkelstein puts out, and every roster will have a marking on there. Is this kid high major, low major, D1, D2, D3? His height, his weight, his email, his phone number, the schools that have offered him. So these coaches go into New England, and where they can go and see three schools in one day with college-ready players that have been away from mom and dad, or they can go to Lexington, Kentucky and see one kid at one practice, right? So you get much more bang for your buck. So from April until October, your college exposure is going to be through the roof. Now, there's no guarantee that that's going to give you an offer or a scholarship, but you will have more eyeballs on you than if you didn't do that route. Plus, basketball-wise, you're still going to be around better teammates than you probably had at your high school, better coaching, and better competition in your games. So that's the benefit of doing the athletics. And mind you, they usually have a beautiful weight room on campus that you can access anytime you want to with a strength coach, which a lot of kids don't have. So that's athletic. Academic, you're going to have small class sizes. If you're a post-grad, you can retake one class that you might not have gotten a good grade in. You can take basket weaving, right, and just mess your way through the year. Or you can actually take college credits if the prep school offers it. And I always tell my clients, look, if you can take the college credits, take them. They don't always transfer to the college you go to, but at least you're getting your mind ready for doing college-level work. And if you do that, the transition to a college academic classroom is going to be much more seamless. The third thing is emotional maturity. Every time a kid leaves home, they get homesick. I don't care if it's to the community college in town or it's halfway across the world. Now you're getting your homesickness out of your system at a prep school, which deals with that every single year. So they know how to handle it. So once again, when you hit your college campus the following year, you're not going to be missing mom and dad like your freshman teammates and classmates are that haven't been away from home before. You've already been away from home. So these college coaches know you're not going to be, in the dumps for a while like normally happens, right? So that's third. And lastly, like I mentioned earlier, you're going to be around kids from all different cultures, every time zone, probably every continent. And the story I give on that, Mike, is my first day at prep school basic training at the Air Force Academy's prep school. My roommate was a Navajo Indian named Lawrence Yazzie. And we stayed up most of the night when we should have been getting sleep before basic training started. And he was asking me, hey, what's it like to be a Catholic kid from Kentucky? And I was asking him, what's it like to be a Navajo from a reservation in Arizona? And mind you, he is also my teammate. He was the first Native American to ever play D1. Well, fast forward 20 years, he was the best man at my wedding. I was the best man at his wedding, right? Two guys that would never have ever crossed paths without a prep school. So there is that opportunity there to meet someone that could be your best friend the rest of your life from a culture you would never have otherwise been exposed to. So those are the four pillars: athletic, academic, emotional maturity, and then the culture.
I'm assuming that most of the clients that come to you, their number one concern is probably the athletic piece, and then the other ones kind of fall into place after that. Is that correct, or is that an incorrect assumption?
I'd say it's 80%. A couple of the other reasons are, one, the kid needs to mature and just get away from home and get away from his friends and from his parents. And then the other one is they're young for their age. So they might graduate high school at 17 and where everyone else is reclassed already or was held back in junior high. This kid needs that year to catch up and be par with his classmates.
Makes total sense. All right, next question for you. Do you have conversations with college coaches about what success they've had with players from the various prep schools? So obviously you can talk to the prep school coach and you can kind of see and look at those experiences. But then I would guess that you probably want to have at least some conversations with college coaches about, hey, people from this particular school, when you get kids that come from this school, what are the results? What kind of kids are they turning out, both in terms of students, athletes, just the people themselves, again, talking about the culture piece of it. So how many conversations do you have with college coaches about the success that players that they've recruited from these prep schools have?
Yeah, I remember when I first went to my college coaching buddies and asked them which prep schools I should go to first. Here are a couple of them. Worcester Academy in Worcester, Massachusetts. A couple famous alumni from there. Mike Malone, who's the coach of the Nuggets. Rick Carlisle, coach of the Mavs. The founder of New Balance, Jared Jack. So they've got a great history there. It's an old school prep school in downtown Worcester, Mass. And every single coach I talked to said, you got to go there. You got to go there and check that school out. And I've luckily sent two kids there so far. Brewster Academy, which is one a lot of people know. That place has sent kids. I think they got 14 or 15 players that have played in the NBA. That's a constant that people said, you've got to go see. And then Northfield Mount Hermon. And Northfield Mount Hermon has sent more kids to the Ivy League basketball programs than all the other prep schools combined. So in the past like 5 or 7 years. So those are the three programs that were common denominators among college coaches. So when I talk to coaches, you know, every coach has their relationships, and that's different among every assistant and head coach across college. But if you're an Ivy League coach, you are going to make annual pilgrimages to Exeter, Northfield, Mount Hermon, and these other high academic prep schools. So I wouldn't say there's one that is a feeder school to another. There might be. I'd have to think about that a little bit. But think about it. If you're a college coach, Mike, would you rather take an 18-year-old kid who's been playing public school ball, or would you rather take a kid that's been away from home, had a tougher academic environment, most likely a better coach with better competition daily in practice and in games, and gotten over the homesickness? If you're asking me, on paper, they're going to, you know, 9 times out of 10 take, if the talent's the same, they're going to take the prep school kid, right, who's already done that. So, you know, not every program in America does it, but I know a few years ago, the Final Four was going on, and I think 25% of the roster was filled with prep school kids of those four teams. So yeah, college coaches on a whole love it, and there's no reason they wouldn't.
All right, we talked before the podcast asking a dumb question. So here's the first question that may or may not be a dumb question. What's the difference between a post-grad year and a prep school year? Is there a difference between the two?
Yes. So think of prep schools as a four-year high school. It's a boarding school. That's what a prep school is a boarding school. Most of the kids stay on campus. There's a few day students that come from the local area to go there, but it is a boarding school. So 9th through 12th. And then a lot of these schools, not all of them, but about 90% of them have a post-grad year, which is a gap year between graduation and college. And just for your listeners that might not know, the NCAA says you have 5 years to do 4 years of high school. So you can do that in two different ways. One, you can do 4 years of high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and then a post-grad year. So that is 5 years to do 4 years of high school. Or you can go freshman, sophomore year at one school, transfer to another one and reclass, and then do your sophomore year again, then junior, senior year. That's freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. That's 4 years to do 5 years, right? So you can do either or. So a post-grad year is just a year at these academies. Now, there's very few post-grad-only academies. Bridgeton Academy up in Maine, with a Hall of Fame coach up there named Whit LeJour, they're an all-boys, all-post-grad school. So just like Calipari, every year they've got to refresh the entire school for every single sport.
Wow.
Yeah, wow, a lot of pressure.
That's a process right there. The recruiting and admissions office is going to be really busy, I would think.
Absolutely. So it's crazy they do that. But them, and yeah, they're the only brick-and-mortar prep school that's just post-grad. So I hope that answered your question.
No, it did, for sure. Because I think that I know for myself, I wasn't 100% sure what the difference was. And I'm sure there are people out there that, same thing, were a little bit confused upon, okay, what's the difference between the two? And how do you figure out which one is the right one for you? All right. Give me an idea of the process when somebody, let's say they discover your website and they're reaching out and they're getting in contact with you for the first time. What does that process look like as you're kind of onboarding them and taking them through your process to help them find the right place and the right fit? What does the process look like for your end and for their end?
Yeah. So what I do first is anyone that reaches out to me, I send them a questionnaire back. And basically, we're asking for bona fides, height, weight, position, GPA, test scores, highlights, high school, graduation year, why do you want to do prep school, and what do your parents think about it? And then I put my info sheet on there, which includes my price. And that, you know, then I'll hear back probably from 50% of the people that get that email. Price scares off a lot of them, which is fine. Then I get answers back from people. So if I see, you know, they've already graduated high school, which happens a lot. If I see that they've got like a 2.0 GPA and they're 5'5", if I see the highlights and they're not very good, that's all fine and dandy, because my next email that goes out is, hey, thanks for sending that to me. Prep school costs between, you know, $15,000 and $65,000. What's the max amount you're willing to invest in this? And then about 50% of those emails go unreturned. But then I'll get emails back, and some people say, well, I want a scholarship. Or some people say, well, I might want to pay $5,000. Or someone might say, well, money's not an issue. So depending on the factors we talked about earlier, if it's a 6'9 kid with good grades, who already has D1 offers but only has $5,000, I can work with that because there's a demand for that kind of kid. If there's a kid that's 5'5", not great grades, but his dad can write a $65,000 check, there's a place I can find for that. So it really, there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's kind of hard to explain. It's just something that's kind of in my head, but I kind of know real quick if I can find a place for a kid. And Mike, if I get a kid that's kind of questionable, like say 6'8", with bad grades and no offers and kind of raw and his $8,000, and I don't know if that's going to work or not, I'll tell the family, look, let me send this out to 5 prep schools and see if I get any feedback. And if I do get feedback, you guys, we can move forward and you can be a client. If I don't, then I've saved you the time and effort of going through this whole process with me. So that's kind of the process there. Now, if we both decide that, hey, I think you're good enough to go to a prep school, everything checks out, you want to work with me, then we move on to the first phase in being my client. Now, what I do, and this is a great suggestion for any kid out there that wants to get seen by college, is I make all my clients, and by clients, I mean the player, they have to make their own recruiting website. And it does not have to be fancy. It does not have to be slick. It just have to have the bona fides on there that a prep school coach needs. Height, weight, transcript, social media, contact info, game tape, game halves, extracurricular activity, coach's name, AAU name, schedule, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff needs to be on a website. And Mike, I promise you, this should only take an hour. These kids are technologically savvy. You can make a website for free on Wix.com, and it does not need to look good at all. In fact, the best website I ever had was from the worst player I ever had as a client. And guess what? That website did not make him any better. It doesn't hide your ability. So it's just for informational purpose. And it means the kid is not just sitting back and letting me and the parents do all the work. It means they're involved in it as well. And guess what? With that website, that kid can now send that to any college he wants to. And guess what? If he goes in the summer and bumps up his ACT 2 points and has a 20-point, 20-rebound game that's better than the highlights he's got on there, he can update this stuff. This website's a living, breathing recruiting document that's a tool they can use until the day they sign with a college. So one, like I said, the down payment's due. We've got to have the website done. Once I've got that, then I talk to the family about, okay, do you want to be at Brewster and be the 13th man on the team? Do you want to go on a team and be the man? Do you want to go to a military academy? Do you want to spend the $85,000 and go to IMG? Or do you want to go to a school with a couple D1 guys, a couple D2, a couple D3s, which is a good blend of talent? And once I kind of figure that out, figure out the kid's goals, the finances, the website, that's when I go through my database of schools and start picking them out. And if I pick out 15 schools, what I'll do is, if I was choosing for that family, here's where I'd put the kid first. Here's where I'd put him second. Here's where I'd put him third. And this is only for me, Mike. I don't share this with the family. I do not ever tell a family where to go. What I tell them is I might put you in front of 5 schools and you make the choice. If you go to any of those 5 schools, they're going to be great options for you. It just comes down to the best fit that you guys feel based on your experience of either talking to the coach, visiting the school, or the financial package they ended up giving them, right? So that's what I do, is I put them in front of the right fitting 5 schools out of the 100 that offer a post-grad year. And then I'm there to advocate for the family and walk them through the process the whole way. I'm there keeping the coach up to date on what the other schools are saying, and just kind of, I'm kind of like a liaison. And then the big day in the prep school world, if we started working with you in the fall as a client, all the prep schools give out their decisions on March 10th. Not all of them, but most of them. So March 10th is a big day in my world, because that's when a prep school will say you're either accepted or you're not. And if you are accepted, here's the price of tuition you're going to have to pay. Now, let's say I told a kid, hey, you only have to pay $30,000. And I've told the prep school that. They might get 3 admission letters back. And one might say, hey, we'll take you, but you have to pay $40,000. Another letter might come back and say, hey, we'll take you. You can pay $30,000. But then another prep school might come back and say, hey, we like you so much, you only got to pay $20,000. And that's where I help families kind of, just I'm a mirror to them and saying, hey, this one's, maybe your favorite school costs $40,000, but this one's $20,000 less. Like, how much is, going to that school, your number one school, worth? Is it worth $20,000 more? And, sometimes I help negotiate rates down, because if you do want to go to that school that costs $40,000, but you got an offer that a school said, we'll take you for $20K, you can use that to get that price down. And that's where I can save families, you know, potentially tens of thousands of dollars. Not guaranteed at all, but just it's happened in the past. So that's kind of long-winded, but that's the process right there. And I hope that made sense to you.
No, it did. Do most players, once they sort of narrow down where they're considering going, do most players and their families take a physical trip to the school before they end up making a decision about where they're going to go?
Ideally, yes. But during COVID, no one could visit. And some international kids can't visit. And some kids that might not have the means or the schedule can visit. So it's always better if you can. But what I say to families that can't is, look, this is only 9 months if you're doing a post-grad year. If you're doing more than a post-grad year, you need to really visit. It's pretty important. But if you're there for 9 months, the most important thing, if price is even, is going to be your relationship with the coach. And why I say that, Mike, is that all these prep schools are beautiful. They've all got great academics, dorms, weight rooms, you know, good competition. But that coach is going to be the guy that's, you know, getting you better in skill sessions, who's going to be determining playing time, who's going to be calling college coaches on your behalf. So if you don't have a good feeling about that coach, you shouldn't go there. But if there's a guy you bond with over the phone pretty quickly, you need to really take that into serious consideration. And to me, the most important point, well, again, this is price being even among all schools, is the prep school coach. Because and these are great coaches, and sometimes it comes down to a gut feeling. The best news in my world, Mike, is when a family comes to me and says, Corey, we have three great options with three great coaches and three great programs, and we do not know which one to pick. And to me, I know that's harrowing for them, but to me, that's music to my ears, because that means they have either any one of those options they go to, they're going to be just fine, right? In fact, they're going to be great because they like all three. It's going to be a tough decision. But that to me means I put them in front of the right coaches and right programs. So yeah, it's important for me to pick on the coach, because even if you don't visit, with technology nowadays, they've got YouTube videos. They've got beautiful campus videos on their website. They're doing virtual tours. I mean, you can get a good landscape of the land. And usually these places, when you show up in person, are prettier than the website.
It's amazing what the technology allows us to do today. And I think obviously accelerated by COVID, where this stuff was all coming. But just the fact now that I'm sure all these schools are streaming their games. So if you want to check out what their games look like, and everything's on YouTube, so you can see style of play, you can see the way the coaches are coaching. And it's just, it's incredible to me, the amount of information goes back to what you said about the player building a website and building their social media resume, so to speak, and just having all that stuff so that, you know, it goes both ways. Obviously the player makes it easier to check out the school, the coach, and what they're all about, versus, you know, the obviously the school and the coach can check out the athlete in the same way. It's just, you know, you think back to what it was like when you and I were going back and trying to go through this process, completely, you know, completely different. You pretty much had to see a kid in person. There wasn't AAU the same way there is now, and just trying to evaluate. And it's just, there's just so much more information out there. You just have to know how to navigate it. And I certainly think that that's where you and what you're doing in this world certainly helps people, because again, there's not a whole lot of people who are familiar with the system and really what it is and what it's all about. And I think that there's a tremendous need. I always say this across basketball in all different areas, and this is certainly one of them, where I think one of the things that we could really, really improve people's decision-making is just through education and helping people to understand what it is that they're going through. With actually, this podcast started out as Jason and I talking about how to navigate sort of the youth basketball world and how to pick the right AAU program and how to know what you're looking for and how to be a basketball parent. That's kind of where we started, and then it morphed into an interview show. But I think that education piece, there's so many people that, especially if they have, it's their first kid or it's their only kid that's kind of going through and is interested in being a college athlete, whether it's basketball or some other sport, you just think about how confusing it is to navigate all this stuff. Even when you are a quote unquote expert, there's still things that you're like, am I doing it right? Could I be doing it better? Could I be doing it differently? What should I be doing? And so many people, I think, are just flying blindly, that to be able to provide education to me is the most critical thing that we could do to improve the basketball landscape for players, parents, and coaches all the way from elementary school all the way up through college. It's just making people more educated about what the process is. And I think you're a piece of that for sure.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. And mind you, like, you know, I used to coach high school ball. I used to help my kids try to, you know, get seen by college coaches. And now I just spend all of my bandwidth just focused on this prep school world and business. And, oh, I don't know it all. Every day I'm learning something new. Every time I talk to a coach and I get a new nugget, I'm grateful, because that makes me that much more better able to help the next kid I talk to, right? So, and I like that. If I knew everything right now, it'd be boring, right? So I love learning every day. And on your point too, yeah, like we had a Zoom roundtable a couple weeks ago with three AAU experts, just because I get that question constantly, like, hey, what AAU team should my kid be on? What tournament should we go to? And I don't know. I don't delve in that world. So I got three experts on to help explain to people, and hopefully that'll be evergreen, just like yours you did a couple years ago, to help people in that department. Another question we get a lot is, what camp should my kid go to? And I'm going to do a podcast next week with a guy who's an expert in this and just break down all the camps. You know, hey, if I go to a big time college camp, what's that like? What's a D3 skills session camp like? What's an elite camp like? What's point guard college or big man camp? We're going to break down that all. And, you know, just so parents know from a trusted source what to do. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, a couple of things about my childhood. One, when I grew up, my dad said, we got 6 weeks for going to basketball camps. Pick which ones you want to go to. And we'd look at a calendar and be like, okay, well, this Tennessee Tech's this week and West Virginia's is this week. And we'd go to a different camp every week, every summer. And, you know, I was a great free throw shooter, and I learned how to shoot free throws correctly at a station my freshman year in high school at a Tennessee Tech camp. So you never know when you're going to get those nuggets. And so to me, like, that was in the old school days when there was more fundamentals and there was less people looking to make a quick buck. So it's a little bit easier back then. But you talk about everyone able to use the internet nowadays. That's a good thing and a bad thing, because now everyone can use the internet. And that means instead of a coach getting his trusted source calling about a kid, he might, if you're Duke, they might be having 500 emails a day come in, right? And my dad, you know, he grew up in the late 60s in Northeast Indiana. And he was 7 feet tall, and he wanted to play for UCLA. And back then, you know, that's three time zones away. And his coach called a guy, and then John Wooden heard about my dad. Didn't see tape or film, but John Wooden called one of his buddies back in Indiana, asked about my dad, and the guy's like, nah, he's not good enough to play at UCLA. And that was it. It was through word of mouth and trusted, crusty scouts that roamed the country. And so that's where, like, those crusty scouts were gatekeepers. And, you know, if that crusty scout liked you, you were golden. And here's the thing too, another story I heard, I'm babbling on here, Mike, but in Kentucky, when I was coaching there, Pitino is at Louisville. And if Pitino showed up to a gym to recruit a kid, the kid would play his heart out because he knew Pitino was in the gym. But Pitino had this old crusty New York guy that he used to send to gyms on like a Tuesday night in January when no one would be there. And he'd sit up in the top balcony and watch the kid and see how he performed with no big time coach in the crowd. And that would determine if Pitino would offer the kid or not. So all these are little nuggets just to say, like, the more you talk to people, the more information you get, the more you'll pick up, the better it'll be if you're a kid or a parent trying to move forward. Because unfortunately, of all sports, you know, ours might have the shadiest of characters within high school basketball. I mean, would you agree with that? Is there a shadier sport than basketball, do you think?
I would agree with you there. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that – I mean, there's a lot of obviously a lot of great people.
Absolutely. And, the majority are great, I would say.
Correct. But I do think you have some bad actors that are out there that are only in it for the money that they can make from it. And I see people exploiting, again, the lack of education on the part of parents and players of – what's important. If you are paying money to go to a fourth grade showcase where college coaches are going to be there watching your fourth grader play, you're probably not getting your money's worth, just as a little tip and an example of things that, you know, things that I see, or you'll talk to parents, you know, my third grader's the top ranked player in the Midwest. Well, okay, great. Like, who told you that? And where are you getting that? That's not to say your kid's not a good player, but you know, we all know that just what you do as a fourth grader or what you do as a sixth grader or whatever has no bearing on ultimately what you can be or not be as a player. And I still think it comes down to, as I've said a couple times, educating people on what's real and what's not. And the more you can educate people on what's real and what's not, and also tell them the truth about recruiting and about playing college basketball. And look, there's lots of kids who are good enough to play college basketball, but they may not want to put in the time. Like, people don't understand the commitment that it takes to play at any level, and also how good you have to be. I mean, I tell people, and we've had tons of Division III coaches on here, and the number of times that those coaches have said to us, hey, you know, we're recruiting a kid and they're kind of blowing us off a little bit, and we're talking to them, and over the course of that, we say, hey, have you ever even seen a Division III basketball game? Do you have any idea how good our players are? And then those kids will come on campus and play in some pickup games with Division III players, and they're like, holy, you know, I mean, these kids are, you know, I mean, it's just, they're way better than what you think. And I think that the message that we always try to get across is that if you have an opportunity to play college basketball and it's what you want to do anywhere at any level, and you can find the right fit and you can have a great experience, because you said it off the top, like, how many of these kids are actually going to go and play professional basketball? I mean, the percentages of them that are going to get an opportunity to do that and get paid to play their sport is minuscule. And that includes the guys that are going to maybe go to Europe and play in some third tier league in Germany for a year or two and not make any real money. And a great, great experience. If you get an opportunity to do that, by all means, go and do it. But if you're counting on that to set you up financially for the rest of your life, and I just always feel like people are chasing this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and they don't stop to enjoy the moment where they are. And so they're always, okay, I'm a sixth grade AAU player, and now I've got to make sure that I get to the right high school so I can do this. And then I'm in high school and I'm already worried about college. I'm not even enjoying my high school career because I'm so worried about where I'm going to go to school. And I think all those things, it's important to make sure that you're educated and make sure that wherever you are, whatever stop you are on your journey, that you enjoy it. And to me, if we could get more people doing that and more people understanding the process through people like you who actually do understand what it's all about, I think we would have so many more people that had a positive experience with the game, which therefore reflects well on the game and helps it to grow and helps the game to get better, which is ultimately, I think, what we all, everybody who loves basketball, like you and Jason and I, that's what we want to see. We want to see the game grow. We want to see the game be healthy. We want to see people having great experiences in the game and not have them fall victim to some of the shady things that, you know, we've talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I had Joe Mantegna, who's the head coach of the Blair Academy basketball team. And for those that don't know, at one point, you know, he had Luau Deng, Charlie Villanueva, and Royale Ivy on his team. It's three NBA players, and he's, you know, one of the best out there. One of his players just committed to Duke a few weeks ago. And he gave me the analogy that, you know, with all the transfers going on right now, which is a generational thing, college basketball could potentially go the way of boxing in Major League Baseball, to where fans no longer really tune in because it's just, they can't keep track of who's on a team anymore. There's no more four-year players in a lot of these big-time programs, and just it dies down, except for the hardcore folks, until March Madness picks up again. And think about it, you know, I think the NCAA was really at its heyday. I don't know. I mean, this is me speaking generationally, but like when Duke had Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley and those guys that you grew up watching year after year, I think that's when basketball is at its peak. And now, you know, me being from Lexington, you know, every year now Calipari's there, the roster completely turns over. And me and other fans don't know who these guys are. We just know their rankings. And then within 9 months, they're gone again. And that's kind of happening in the transfer market now. And I don't know who's advising everyone on this, but that's just something that's, it's a little bit nerve-wracking of the future of college basketball that you and I love so much, that has provided a lot of opportunity for you and I. And I wonder if this youth mentality of all or nothing and not enjoying it and training and transferring school to try to get to the best spot to eventually get the pro deal, I wonder if that bottom-up kind of approach that's been happening in the last 15 years is what's going to potentially cause the demise of NCAA basketball as we know it. And I don't know. But when he told me that, it just kind of depressed me. And I was wondering what your thoughts on that were.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I know, speaking for myself, and part of it is, again, as you get older and, you know, I have three kids and they're all doing things. And so when you're young and you're single and you have lots of time, you can follow a million different things and be up to date. And like, I remember as a kid, getting the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook and going through and not only knowing all the college players, but looking at that top 50 high school players and knowing, you know, guy number 49, who was some kid out of Macon, Georgia, that I knew his stats and what, you know, what coaches said about him and the little blurb that would be in that book all the time. And I knew everything. And part of that was because when guys went to school, even the very best players, you know, they used to call it you were a hardship case. So you left after your junior year. So you were still around for 3 years. I think about like the Patrick Ewing, Georgetown Hoyas, or the Ralph Sampson, Virginia Cavaliers, or you mentioned the Leitner, Duke Blue Devils, like those teams, the Larry Johnson, even that UNLV team, like those teams, you get to know those guys. They're the best players and they stick around and the core of the group is together. And yeah, they change a little bit around the fringes, but for the most part, the stars were around. And so now, I mean, one, I don't know the guys the same way coming in out of high school because I'm not following that world as closely as I did when I was back closer to those guys' age. But now once they get there, the stars, like, I mean, maybe I watched half a game that Cade Cunningham played this year. And I probably didn't watch any of them in the regular season. And then I watched like half of a tournament game. Whereas if it had been the freshman of the year in 1987, I guarantee I probably would have watched that guy play 20 games. And it's just different. So I think the NCAA, I definitely think that its popularity is waning. I think the biggest question mark facing the NCAA and the biggest thing that we're going to see change is the NBA, I know, is always talking about behind the scenes the idea of creating academies and this G League Ignite team that they put together, that Jalen Green and Kuminga, whatever that kid's name is, Jonathan Kuminga, that is, you know, that's the first step in kind of giving guys an alternative to college basketball. And I do think that there's where there's money to be made, it's likely that something is going to eventually pop up. And so you start thinking about, could you start, you know, the prep school model almost, but start it with seventh graders instead of starting it with ninth graders? Could you start it with fourth graders instead of starting it with ninth graders? And if there was money to be made in it, I can see where it could go that way. And then eventually that just waters down NCAA basketball to the point where who knows what that looks like. I mean, I have no idea what that looks like, but you can certainly see where the potential for basketball to become more privatized, both at the college level and even at the high school level. I mean, I've had coaches tell me that, high school coaches, that they think that high school athletics, as we know, it won't be around in 25 years, that it will be replaced by the club model, where you can get better coaching, you can play more games without as many restrictions as these high school athletic associations are putting on you. You're going to get a, quote, professional coach instead of somebody who's a teacher during the day and then is just coaching after school. And I've heard all the arguments, and I think they're legitimate. I mean, there's a legitimate chance that that could happen. Now, whether it does or not, I don't know. But certainly, there's going to be things popping up that could potentially rival NCAA basketball and high school basketball in the future. And it'll be certainly interesting to see how it goes.
Well, it's here now. It's called overtime.
Right. Yeah.
Right. That's, and I'm very curious to see.
That's Kevin Ollie, right? Kevin Ollie's the guy overseeing that. Am I correct? I think
he's the coach, but they've got a couple other big time guys, and the kids that are going to be in the team are going to get paid $100K a year.
Yeah.
Which, if I was a 17-year-old, that sounds like a lot of money.
It does.
But now, as an adult, you're like, well, that's not going to last you very long at all, especially right. After taxes, expenses.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. So I just, and I don't know how you can tell a pro at 16, whether you're a big man or a guard. I mean, John Wall was a late bloomer. A lot of these guys were late bloomers. So taking that $100K and then giving up college eligibility, to me, just seems very risky. And I'll be very curious to see how it turns out. And my opinion is capitalistic, to where if you want to skip college and go pro, do it. Go for it. Like, I've seen in a lot of programs, especially Kentucky, since I follow them so much, the kids that are just there, just biding their time until they can go to the draft. And it's not always the best situation.
Right.
Right. So right. I don't mind people doing this. And maybe it makes basketball in college more pure in the future. Maybe it
right.
does.
Right. You may honestly have, it may be more similar to a Division III product where you have, quote unquote, true student athletes, where you know, you're not having a guy show up for 7 months, and then as soon as their season ends in March, that they stop going to class and they're just preparing for the draft and whatever else that you sometimes have with these big time programs. And yeah, there's a lot of ways. There's a lot of ways that it could go. NCAA basketball could go away, and it could be a hugely negative thing for players that used to be involved in it that go these other routes. Or you could also see where it could provide another avenue for players who want to go to the professional ranks. It could provide a quality roadmap for them to do that while also leaving behind players who are not interested in that, are not good enough for to take that route, and still be able to experience the joy and the fun and all the stuff that goes along with being a college athlete. So I could see it. I could see it going both ways, where you could take this fork in the road where, man, that system could turn out really bad for everybody in the game of basketball. And then conversely, I could see it going a direction where, if it was executed correctly, that it could end up maybe having a positive impact where things would just look different, but they could also be improved. So who knows? Who knows what could happen there?
Well, I've got a theory on the COVID situation.
All right, I'm ready.
Tell me what you think. So with all these transfers happening, with all the seniors getting granted an extra year, there's probably, I think I've heard, 500 less spots for high school players to go into the college D1 ranks. Have you heard that number, about 500?
I haven't heard the number, but I know there's a lot less. Like, we talked to Paul Biancardi from ESPN. Sure. I talked to him, what was it, a week ago today. And Paul basically said that, yeah, he didn't give me a number, but basically said that if you are a high school player, it was so much more difficult, obviously, to get a scholarship because, one, not only were there not spots, but it goes even beyond that. It was just the uncertainty of college coaches not knowing which guys are going to come back for that fifth year. So you don't even know if you have – it's not even that there isn't a roster spot. It's that coaches don't even know if there's going to be a roster spot because they don't know who's coming back. They don't know who's in the transfer portal. We've also had coaches say that in a lot of cases, like, why wouldn't you go recruit the transfer portal first, where you have guys who are in there who are already proven as college athletes versus taking a chance on a kid who's a high school player who, like we talked about in terms of the prep school, hasn't been away from home, hasn't adjusted to the physicality and the speed and the being on their own and all those things. So there's a lot of potential ramifications. So continue. I didn't mean to steal all your thunder there.
Well, Paul obviously knows way more about this than me, so I'll take his lead on that. But my theory, thinking about this, is let's assume it's 300. All right, so 300 high school kids are not going to go to D1 this year that would in a normal year. That means that these are 300 guys that aren't good enough to be there. So the D1 game should be better. So those guys will trickle down and other D1 transfers to the D2 level, which means D2 will now be better. And then players that there's no room at that level will now trickle down to the D3 level. And then players that just aren't good enough for any college level period are just not going to play. They're going to have to go intramurals or just give up their dreams. So in my theory, and I don't know if this is right or wrong, it's just my theory, the D1 talent pool should be better. The D2 talent pool should be better. And D3 should have a lot of guys there that should be better than D3 level normal. But that's going to raise the level of competition among that level as well. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. I mean, I don't see a way that couldn't be the case when you talk about those kids who are all sticking around. If you have a guy who's a fifth-year senior versus you have a kid who's an incoming college freshman, I mean, which one of those players is going to be better? I mean, clearly, all things being equal, the fifth-year senior is going to be a better player than the incoming freshman across the board. Now, that's not to say, obviously, that there isn't an incoming freshman that's better than a fifth-year senior. But across the board, you would expect that experienced player to be better. And obviously, that player is taking a roster spot away from somebody who would be at the lower end of the spectrum. So as you said, that bumps them down to Division II and then consequently bumps kids down to Division III. So yeah, I would think that it would raise the level of play at each of those levels. And then it also excludes some kids who ordinarily might have gotten a chance at the Division III college level. Maybe they are not on a roster, whereas in years past, they might have been able to make it. And when I talked to Paul, he basically said, you know, I asked him, one of the questions I had for him was, this obviously continues to trickle down year after year because it's not only impacting this year's kids, but it's going to impact next year's kids because now you're going to have that 500 kids that didn't get a D1 scholarship out of high school who may have gone to prep school or may have done whatever. And now those kids are back in the pool competing for those same scholarships. And Paul said he thought it would take about 4 years for it to kind of normalize and get back to the level where it was. And who knows, maybe combine what Paul was saying with what you're saying, and 4 years from now, the level of play at the Division III, Division II, Division I, and NAI levels may all be improved because you've just had to raise the level of your game in order to even get onto a roster. So I think that's entirely possible for sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring that back around full circle to prep schools. So if you're class of 21 and you didn't have a season, didn't get seen by coaches, and you check all the boxes to go to a post-grad year, like I mentioned before, at least a brick-and-mortar prep school, you know, you can always do the post-grad academy if you want to. But if you check those boxes and you're doing this extra year, I tell families, think of it as an insurance plan. You're biding your time to see how this shakes out because, Mike, there's going to be programs that try taking these transfers for the first time ever that have never done it. And some programs are going to like it and succeed with it. And others are going to say, you know what? This isn't really the culture we're normally in. We tried it and don't like it. We're going to go back to prep school and high school kids again. So it's this year, this prep school year is biding you time to see how these college programs are going to experience this new landscape and either stay the same or go back to the way it was. So no one's a psychic on this. No one knows that the prep school year is even going to work. And in fact, you know, there's no guarantees. You might spend $65K on a post-grad year and still not have many good, if any, options if you're not good enough. So there are no guarantees in this at all. But I do not feel sorry for the kids in 21 that aren't getting opportunities. The real hard line answer I give to that is you've had 18 years to get your skill set up, your shot down, your strength up, your grades up. And this is the reckoning here where people are calling your number and you're either good enough or you're not to play at this level. And I know that's an unpopular thing I'm saying right there, but it's a fact. It's pure capitalism. It's pure survivalism. It is not a right that you get to go to the next level. You have to earn it. All right. So I've been saying that a lot throughout the year and getting flack for it, but it's the reality of it. So you've got all this time. It was a surprise, but the strongest will get through and evolve and adapt. And a lot of kids haven't, and they're complaining, but what have you been doing the past 18 years, my man?
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I'm going to give you another scenario that I use a similar phrase or a similar way of thinking that, you know, when you talk about, hey, what have you been doing for the last 18 years or how good are you? Where is your skill level? And I've coached all my kids at AAU basketball and travel basketball. My daughter's a junior and she doesn't play anymore. My son's a freshman. And then I have another daughter who's in fifth grade right now. And over the years, we've played AAU basketball, we've played travel, and we've had teams that are pretty good and we've had teams that are not so good. And as we all know, when you have a not so good team, you'll occasionally run into a coach, a team, a program that will be up by 40 and they'll still be pressing you. And after the game, I'll have parents come, you know, parents from my team will come up to me and, you know, complain or just say, hey, why was that coach, you know, why was that coach still pressing you and you shouldn't have done that? And my response is always, look, if I was that coach, would I still be pressing up by 40 in the second half against a team that clearly had no opportunity to beat us? No, I wouldn't do that. I don't think it's really good sportsmanship. But if you don't like it, the best way to avoid that situation is to get better and to work on your skills and to take that as a lesson that, hey, we're not good enough where we are now. And sometimes parents look at me a little bit cross-eyed when I say that. And I don't say it to be mean, but it's kind of just the same thing that you said where, look, you cannot like it, but you can't control what that other coach is doing. The only thing you can control is how good you are and how good your skill set is. And if you don't like getting beat, guess what? You got to get better. And that's the reality of sports. In a lot of ways, it's the reality of life. If you don't like another company, you know, outbidding you for a particular job, guess what? Then do a better job with your bid so that you get it. And you know, we don't always like to hear that in the world of everybody gets a trophy, but I do think that there's something to be said for, look, you got to get better. And that's something that I try to teach my kids. It's something that I talk to players about all the time is if you don't like getting beat, the best way to avoid that feeling is get better so it doesn't happen so often.
Yeah, and that was Billy Tubbs, I think, that came up with that quote when Oklahoma used to press the tar out of teams and they'd win by 40-50 and he got some vile comments from the other coaches. He's right. Like, get better. Don't let me do it.
The Oklahoma Sooners. There, see, now there's a team right there. Wayman Tisdale, that was my guy back in the day. I loved Wayman posting up on the block and shooting his little lefty jumper. And he was, I'll tell you a funny story. Jason probably, I don't know if he even knows his story. So when I was a kid, there was this game on, do you remember the Commodore 64 computer?
Absolutely.
All right. So there was a game that was, this was a college basketball game. It was all text. And so what you would do is you would have these teams and it would have all the rosters. And I forget the exact year, but it was the year Wayman Tisdale was at Oklahoma and Xavier McDaniel was at Wichita State. And so it would have all the rosters and it would have all their stats. And then you would basically just like press a button and then it would show you the result of that play based on the player or whatever. So you would just sit there and you'd be playing against somebody. You would just press this button. So I would always, whenever I was playing with my friends, I would always be either Oklahoma or I would be Wayman Tisdale, or I would be Wichita State and Xavier McDaniel. And I would just constantly just give them the ball and they would shoot and McDaniel would get like 78 and, you know, Wayman Tisdale would have, you know, 56 or whatever, because they, you know, their stats obviously were outrageous at the time in college. So those were two of
was that the courtside college game on the Commodore 64? Is that what it was called or something
that? Honestly, I don't know. I don't remember what it was called. But I know let's put it this way. I know I probably played it quite a bit considering what it actually was when you look back on it now. Let's put it that way. So,
you know what would be funny is to take a kid that plays like Call of Duty for 12 right. hours a day and say, hey, you have to sit here for 2 hours and play this text game.
Right. Just press this button yeah. over and over again and watch it and see if Xavier McDaniel is going to make this shot.
I used to play Double Dribble. That was my game on Nintendo. And I'd play the first half. And then my uncle, who had no idea how to play video games, played the second half. And we would see if my lead was big enough to prevent him from losing. And it would always get – yeah, that was Double Dribble.
There you go. It's so funny to look back on that stuff. And, I mean, I was never a big video game guy. But I think about, like, the Dr. J versus Larry Bird one-on-one. I remember playing that. And, you know, now you think about the graphics and the NBA 2K and what – you know, what kids have today. I mean, now I pick up a controller and I could barely play Pac-Man, let alone try to play some of these games today with their complexities and whatever else it was. So, all right, here, before we wrap up, we are getting close to an hour and a half.
Okay.
So what I want to do is I want you to spend a minute sharing why people should listen to your podcast and then give out your website again, give out your social media, tell people how they can reach out and get in touch with you. And then after you do those things, I will jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah. So the Prep Athletics podcast is on all major platforms. And we talk to a lot of the top prep school coaches in America. And these are big time guys. They've been around a while. They've got great knowledge. I've also got a couple episodes where I talk about personal experiences. You know, I transferred high schools and it worked for me. You know, if I didn't transfer high schools, I would not have played D1. And I tell that story, especially now since transferring is getting a bad name. We have a AAU roundtable, which is very informative, with three industry experts that give families a good idea on how to do that. So check it out. Pick and choose which one you want. They're real light, but very prep school specific and just lots of good basketball nuggets. My website is prepathletics.com. And I have so many good articles on there, so many good blogs that will walk you through all the questions you might have about prep school. How much does it cost? What are the academics like? How does an international kid get financial aid? All of that is on there, to include a lot of the players I've coached in the past and other fun stuff there. Social media, I'm on Twitter most often. I've got a kid that does Instagram for me, so you can ignore that. Facebook, I don't know who looks at my Facebook page. I do that just because someone tells me to. But Twitter, I'm on there pretty prolific. And I spit out knowledge that a lot of people can't say about the prep school world. And it's not to be mean. It's just to educate people. And my hashtag is always do your due diligence. Like I said, you do not need to hire me. You can pick a prep school, a great one that will change your life on your own. I just have spent the time doing it and visiting places and got experience that I might be able to help you. But, you know, you can absolutely do it on your own. Just like you can represent yourself in court on your own. Or you can hire a lawyer that does it every day, knows the judge, knows the prosecutor, and has that expertise. So that's kind of my background. I'm based out here in Denver, Colorado, but I can help anyone from any country, any state, any time zone in the world. So it's my passion, and I hope to do this till the day I die.
Well, it clearly came across in the episode tonight. And Corey, we cannot thank you enough for taking an hour and a half out of your schedule to jump on with us and educate not only Jason and I, but our entire audience about what the prep school world is really all about, what people should look for. And I think, as we've said throughout the podcast, being able to help educate people about what's going on in the basketball space, and particularly in this space where a lot of people are not familiar with what goes on and what a prep school is really all about. So I thank you for coming on and sharing that information. And I think it's going to be a valuable, valuable episode for anybody who's stuck with it and listened to the entire thing. Hopefully you've come away from this more educated than you were when you first started listening. So again, Corey, can't thank you enough for being a part of it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.